Welcome to Bengals Scribe Session, presented by JosephOtto.com and Inquirer Sports. Here, your Bengals beat writers Paul Daner Jr. and Richard Skinner escort you inside the walls of Paul Brown Stadium to hear the news, analysis, and observations unfolding within the team from those documenting it daily. All with the sidecar of snark and absurdity you've come to expect. Let's go. We're about to start a party in here. He's made strums and guitar in here. Looks like we got a good crowd in here. Turn it up to 10 and get lively.
Ball is out. The Bengals have scooped it up. Terrence Newman running back to the 30, 20, 10, 5, touchdown.
Up in the air. AJ Green makes the catch.
Oh man!
A deflected ball winds up in the hands of AJ Green and the clock hits zero.
All right, welcome to the latest edition of Scribe Session. This one is for you, sad, disruptive, possibly drunk Bengals fan.
Still possibly drunk Bengals fan?
Possibly. I think once they came to, shook off the hangover and realized the score was still 42-21, I think that they just decided just to start drinking again.
Wow. So people that are listening to this on Tuesday could still possibly be drunk from Sunday. Is that what you're telling me?
Choosing to be.
Well, that's a sad, sad, sad Bengals fan.
Most of them are pretty sad right now.
Soon to dial AA, Bengals fan.
Yes. Well, welcome to the podcast. Anyway, our latest edition of Scribe Session. Paul Daner Jr. here with Richard Skinner. Last game is in the books, 42-21. Bengals take the bad L after a 25-point fourth-quarter meltdown. How many? Did you go to the thesaurus for different names for words for collapse and meltdown and? You know, I mean, did you go?
That's one of those
rare
times you actually need to do that, don't you?
Yeah, sometimes you just it's like when you can only say meltdown or collapse so many times, you got to go find more words.
How about the 25 points in a span of about 10 minutes?
Less than that.
Yeah.
Well, the first 18 came in 6:29.
6:29. First 6:29 of the fourth quarter.
It was just an unbelievable, and it was just the latest edition of the Pittsburgh Steelers enforcing their will upon this team.
In this stadium especially. That's the part.
Yeah, 2-10. 2-10 under Marvin Lewis against the Pittsburgh Steelers in this building, Paul Brown Stadium. It's become really, I mean, it's now a part of what Marvin Lewis is defined by. He's defined by playoff losses and the Steelers
coming into Paul Brown Stadium owning him, yeah.
And having good teams in the regular season, but being unable to win in the playoffs, primetime, or against the Steelers at home. I mean, that's a big part of it. You want more synonyms for collapse?
Yes, please.
Catastrophe, crash, debacle.
I love debacle.
I don't know that I dropped.
I thought the Cleveland game was more of a debacle.
Yeah, this wasn't as much of a. It was a fourth quarter debacle.
Yes,
but it wasn't a whole debacle.
Correct.
Destruction, disintegration. Failure. There was definitely some failure.
Some failure going on.
Cataclysm seems a little strong.
Cataclysm, though, to me, was Martavis Bryant running past Leon Hall. That was a cataclysmic moment right there.
Cataclysmic moment. I'm honestly pissed I didn't break out cataclysmic moment in my story now.
For that. To watch an NFL cornerback literally have a guy run past him like he was standing still. That's like when, you know, you go play the pickup game and there's just the one guy you're like, Nobody can cover him.
Yeah.
Yep, there he goes right by me, and I'm trying. I just can't catch up to you, big fast guy.
He's just really fast, and the ball was right on point.
Perfect.
And
Great throw.
It was game over. Yep. Ruination. There's a ruination.
Ruination.
Undoing. Wreck.
Wreck is a good word.
Cave in. Conk out. Crack up. Smash up. There's so many. That's just collapse. I mean, I probably could go in more, but people don't need to hear me running through the thesaurus.
That's good, though. Those were good terms.
Hey, and I'm happy that we need to break out the thesaurus and the dictionary more often on this, because we're here. We're all about intellect.
Kids, those of you listening, probably at home, mom and dad have not just the Google version to go online. There may be a real thesaurus in the homestead. Do you have one of those?
I actually
do. A real paperback
version? I have a paperback thesaurus.
There you go.
I keep it at my desk strictly for looks. I've never cracked that thing.
Let me tell you one of my favorite stories of all time. My youngest daughter, I love her dearly, but she tries my patience at times. And one day she's doing her homework and asked me how to spell a certain word. I literally got up, walked over to where we have this big, hardbound dictionary, and threw it at her and said, there's a lot of things in there that you will be very helpful to you at the end of the day.
Hopefully not directly at her. I mean, this could be used against you in a court of law.
It didn't wing her. That's the good part. It didn't wing her.
I just
threw it in her general direction.
General direction's okay. Okay. But if you make contact, I mean, I'm going to have to keep this recording and probably have to turn it right over to the authorities.
Yeah, sorry about that. I did not hit her. It did not make contact
just
with
thrown
child.
Thrown in her general direction. Yeah,
in an anger fashion.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and now in the day of, you might be aware of the internet.
I look
skinny.
Up words all the time on the internet. I did. In fact, I can't remember. I had to look up raucous to make sure I spelled it correctly.
Yeah, yeah. Raucous. There's raucous and you cause a ruckus with your raucous.
That is correct.
That can get confusing.
Yes, it can.
Welcome to Words with Friends here on Scribe Session. let's move it forward a little bit here. So, I mean, there's a number of takeaways from this latest debacle.
There you go, debacle.
This latest ruination.
Wreck.
Yeah. 42-21, is it, do you care any more about the method in which this is happening? This is now four losses, all by 21 points or more, a total of 95 points they've been defeated by in their four losses.
But they've all happened in different ways. That's the thing. And
does it matter?
No, but you asked him about the method of which it's happened. They've all happened in different ways. I mean, for New England, it was just Tom Brady from the get-go. Mm-hmm. In Indianapolis, it was you couldn't get anything going on offense. In the Cleveland game, it was
Dalton.
Andy Dalton being a train wreck.
Yeah.
It was Andy Dalton's debacle. And yesterday, it was literally one quarter. I mean, for three quarters of football, you got the lead. Pittsburgh wasn't running it all over you like they did in the fourth quarter. They had their moments running the ball. Ben wasn't throwing passes all over the place, although he did have the end of the first half drive that led to a field goal and connected on some big passes on that drive. But really, until the fourth quarter, you were fine. It was going to be
worse?
A close game.
Isn't it worse that it's always something else? Would you prefer that a team had one glaring problem?
No.
That it's always something different?
No, because if it's always something different, that means you can go back and fix whatever that might be. If it's one glaring thing every week that's the reason why, then you do have a problem. There are some things we're going to touch on that you can point to that still have not been fixed, still need to be fixed, have gone 12 weeks with not having much success doing, or 13 weeks now, without doing some things that you would hope this team was going to be able to do. But yeah, if it was the same thing every week, I'd go, there's no fixing this.
Yeah. They have now given, because they gave up 543 yards, 229 of those in the fourth quarter. They have now gone over 500 yards allowed three times this season. Indy, New England,
can
and
I
now
ask you,
again.
Has that ever happened in Bengals history before, Paul?
It has not.
Huh.
It has not.
Have they ever given up 500 yards twice in a season before, Paul?
They have. You know when it was? When you were covering the beat back in 1968 and 1969.
No, think about this. Before man set foot on the moon, they gave up 500 yards twice. Think about that.
Not since man set foot on the moon had the Bengals even given up 500 yards twice
there
in a season. Now they've done it three times. Now you say, Paul, Skinny, you're referencing the moon and other old guy things. This is the new passing era. This happens all the time.
Happens all the time.
Happens all the time. This season, it has happened 15 times in a non-overtime game.
That's not a lot of times, Paul. That team has
gained more than 500 yards.
And you've given up
three of
20%
them.
Of them.
20% of them. The Steelers have chalked up four of those 15 offensively.
Ben had 500-plus passing in one
alone.
Game alone. Yeah.
Alone. I mean, it was kind of the perfect storm where it was almost inevitable something like this would happen. You know what's not good about that? Go to Heinz Field 3 weeks.
Yeah, but, I got that from a lot of people last night, and the only thing I can tell them in return is you have to see what's going on that week.
Yeah.
I can't tell you that just because Team A did that to Team B, that Team B is going to do that to
– No, not at all. Not this year. Not this year. The league has been kooky in that fashion. The Bengals have been kooky. Every team in this division is significantly flawed and has played complete roller coaster style.
Pretty
every last
so.
One of
pretty
them.
Pretty much so.
Whoever wins.
From New England that everybody now wants to anoint. I mean, you go back to that early portion of the season for
but
them.
But in this division, though, in this division, you're talking about who's going to come out of the North, which right now you have the Bengals at 8-4-1.
But Baltimore almost looked like they were left for dead when they blew that game to San Diego.
Yeah.
Voila, you look now at sitting at 8-5 with what they got left on the schedule.
Nothing.
Arguably, they're the team to beat now in this division.
I would absolutely say that. I mean, you pretty much chalk them up a win against Jacksonville. The resurgent Jags.
Yeah. And they at Houston now becomes a little more difficult than maybe you thought it was because they now are in the playoff hunt a little bit on the very fringe of it.
Yeah, on the fringe of it.
And then they got Cleveland at home at the very end. So, no, their schedule's extremely favorable.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at – I mean, there are a number of scenarios here. So Baltimore's 8-5. Pittsburgh is 8-5. Both of those teams, obviously, a half game back of the Bengals, but the difference in schedule is remarkable. Pittsburgh going to the NFC South, which is always a good thing. Although with Pittsburgh...
They've lost two games to
the
NFC South.
You almost say the better team they play, the better chance they have of winning. Their worst games have come against the worst teams.
No question. They've played
down in their competition
all year. They lost at home to Tampa and New Orleans at home.
At Atlanta, then they get Kansas City and the Bengals, and they're building to close. And then Baltimore plays Jacksonville this week and then at Houston, and then they welcome Cleveland in what will probably be the Fighting Johnny Footballs.
Correct.
Cleveland doing their dive that everyone saw coming. It took a few weeks longer than I think people expected.
Because they salvaged that win in Atlanta. That's the one that kind of had everybody hanging on still by a thread that, oh gosh, look at this.
Maybe they will hang around, and now you're seeing the spiral. Handicap this for me, and I'll just say this. Who wins the North? Do the Bengals get in?
I think Baltimore wins the North, and I think the Bengals still get in. I think even one more win might be enough to get them in because of Miami losing yesterday, Kansas
City losing.
If that
wins against Pittsburgh.
Correct. That's great. You have to finish ahead of Pittsburgh, yes.
I think they're going to have
to. That's correct.
I think they now set up where they're going to have to go to Heinz and win.
More than likely.
Barring them pulling off back-to-back wins, including Peyton Manning on Monday Night
Football. Because here's the other question you ask yourself, though. One of the other teams between San Diego, Kansas City, like think about this for a second. Between San Diego, Kansas City, Miami, can one of them get to 10 wins? The easiest answer is can San Diego get to 10 wins? I think you got their schedule up, right?
San Diego, Denver, at San Francisco, at Kansas City, not happening.
Well, then the
maybe
the Bengals win one more game. Paul get to 9-6-1. One of those other wild cards has got to get to 10.
Yeah,
I mean, even if Pittsburgh gets to 10, then you have maybe three teams coming out of this division. That's still a possible scenario.
Yeah, there. I mean, there. That's a possibility for sure. But I mean, I think
Miami really hurt itself with the loss to Baltimore. That was one they put themselves right in the mix.
Miami with Minnesota and the Jets still on their schedule.
Yeah, Minnesota's played better.
Yeah, but I mean those are at the Patriots.
All right, but that
so
that
9-7. 9-7.
So I'm saying the Bengals one more win puts them at 9-6-1, and you're going to force one of those others other than Pittsburgh to get to 10. Can they do it?
Schedule suggests maybe not. I mean, you're probably right about that. I mean, the Texans at Indy, Baltimore, and then Jacksonville at home. Baltimore and Jacksonville at home. I mean,
have to sweep, though, right?
They would have to go win at Indy. I don't think that's an impossible
task.
They'd
have to sweep all three, though.
They would have to win all three.
And then if they win all three, one of those wins comes over Baltimore, and that puts them back into play to win the division. So, I mean.
So maybe you're right. Maybe they only need one.
Maybe.
Maybe 9-6-1 is enough to get them into the playoffs. That probably is.
We'll see.
But there's a lot. There's a point is there is a lot to shake out.
No
here.
Question.
To win the division, they got to get to 10.
To win the division, they got
to win
division,
they
gotta
get
to 10,
and they
got
to win at Heinz Field.
Absolutely. That part I don't dismiss.
Tell me this, and tell me if my gut is wrong here. I feel like this feels like definitely feels like a win in Cleveland this week.
The only thing I tell you, Paul, is what have they done after every loss this year?
They've played very well.
The Carolina game wasn't so well on defense.
But they scored a lot of points.
Yeah. But after every loss,
They come back and played pretty well.
Yeah.
I mean, the worse the loss, the more demoralizing the loss, the better it seems that they've come back and played, particularly the stretch of three on the road. Now they go to Cleveland. You combine how well they've typically played off
the
loss.
That was, of course, I tried to ask Marvin today, and he's not having anything
at this point.
I don't even know if
you they replay Marvin's press conferences on 1530, and you can hear him there, or we'll play some of them for you here, typically on here. Marvin is just, he's done with the answering
he's
of the questions.
He's
in the press
out.
Conferences
he's checked out.
At this point. He has. Every topic is not
usually
something he's
it's a
interested
game.
In.
Usually it's a good little game, and it lasts for about 12 to 13 minutes, and you can usually get a couple of nuggets.
We're done playing.
Today the game was not played. He didn't want to play it. We didn't want to play it, and we were done in 6 minutes.
Done in 6 minutes. Good night. Good night. That's pretty much where that sits at. So, I mean, but you talk about they've played so well coming off losses. George Iloka said to us last week when we had him on our very eventful Beyond the Stripes, which if you haven't seen the breakout videos of George on the desk doing impressions of Kim Kardashian and Steve Smith and Kobe Bryant, check that out. And check out the improv breakout viral that we had from last week as well, because it's just hilarious and gives you a good view of George. Rant over. But George told us in the segment before that, when I asked him who is their biggest rival, he said, he was trying to hide it and not talk about who he thinks it really is. He thinks it's Cleveland now because that one stung. You could tell the way everyone has really referred to that as the rock bottom breaking point moment of this season. That's been readily apparent ever since then. It really shook these guys. They felt embarrassed and they want to take it out in Cleveland. You can really sense, you add that onto everything that's on the line and coming off that demoralizing loss against Pittsburgh. At the very least, I think you will get the best of the Bengals up there in Cleveland.
And Paul, again, I point out that it was one ugly, awful quarter that snowballed like that. You know, even at 28-21, you've got them pinned back at the 6-yard line. You get a 3-and-out there, you're probably taking over at the 50-ish. Only down a touchdown, was still at the time probably 6 minutes plus on the clock. Mm-hmm. Plenty of time to go march down. And all of a sudden, within one play, that's it. You know, people can point to the fumble all they want, and it was a bad turnover, and it led to the go-ahead touchdown. But you got them backed up at the 6. Get a 3-and-out, make them punt. You have a chance then to get it right back and be just fine instead. Game over. That's why yesterday was a bad way to lose a football game, but it happened so fast in such a strange way. And even Paul Gunther talked about it being felt fluky. It did feel fluky to some degree.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. That's why I don't think it's at all crazy to think that the Bengals would go up to Pittsburgh and win. I think they're still very evenly matched.
Absolutely.
With the Steelers.
I think the first three quarters proved that.
But this is something we've talked about the last couple of weeks. Is how the Bengals have played against the best competition on their schedule.
Now, that's not a good thing.
That's not a good thing. And we talked about this the last few weeks, and now it's even more obvious. On Monday on the blog, I broke down from top to bottom, ranked by current record, the Bengals' schedule. It goes New England at 10-3, L. Indianapolis, 9-4,
L.
Pittsburgh, 8-5, L. Baltimore, 8-5. They do have two wins. They've had Baltimore's number for whatever reason.
Yep.
Cleveland 7-6. L. And then Houston, Atlanta, New Orleans, all W's. The tie against Carolina, Tennessee, Jacksonville, Tampa are all 2-11. All your wins. You at this point in the season float to whatever your level is.
There's no question.
You are what your record says you are, and you look at who they've beat, what their line of demarcation is. They're an average football team trying to sneak into the back end of the playoffs, and they're no better than
their
that.
Their line of demarcation is, it appears they're a slightly better team than Houston. They've proven to be better than Baltimore based on the two wins. And Houston sits at what? 7-6.
7-6.
Baltimore sits at what? 8-5.
Eight and five.
That's why you're right in that 8-4 right in the middle of it.
And now having a dogfight for your life against the toughest competition of any team in the conference.
Although you could argue you're playing a Cleveland team that's in that Houston-ish range.
Yeah, but I mean, compared to what everybody else has.
Oh, no question.
Three remaining games, toughest of any team
in
football.
Three
San Diego
teams.
is close, but they're not. I mean, it's that's what it is.
Right. Three teams with winning records, including arguably this one of the teams that's in that New England range of the thing.
Right.
Obviously, Pittsburgh being the other.
Yeah. And so, Where to start? I mean, you got to talk about what do you do on defense I mean, the defense has been so good. Do you just look at this as fluky?
Well,
is it that easy?
I think that quarter was fluky, yes.
Yeah.
But the common theme for us for a while was the run defense. And it looked like it was fixed for those three games in a row. And yesterday it looked like it was back to that 6 or 7 game stretch.
Definitely in the fourth quarter.
Especially in the fourth quarter, yeah. No question. And the one thing that I swear it sounds like everybody is in denial, from Marvin Lewis to Paul Gunther, is they keep seeming to think they're getting some pretty good pressure on that quarterback. And my eyeballs tell me they're not even coming close.
Not even not just your eyeballs. I mean, really, you know, the numbers.
Well, the numbers
sacks.
There's
no denying.
Yeah, well, I can tell you, if you wanted to use the quarterback hurry category,
the disruptions are astronomically lower than they have been in the past.
Exactly.
Let me run down some numbers in case you're interested in such things. Bengals have 15 sacks this season.
Now, in fairness, very quickly, Paul, they have had, what, 3 or 4 sacks the last 2 weeks wiped out by penalty.
They've had 3 wiped out by penalty, 1 on the guy making the sack.
That's correct.
Geno Atkins' face mask.
Yeah, I know.
For the sack. And that's fine. I mean, you know, but they have 15 sacks in the season.
Many.
I don't care how many penalties or 8-man protections that you're seeing. 15 sacks in a season where the last 3 years, the lowest number of sacks they had in any of those seasons was 43. Okay? They have 15 sacks this season. Only once in the last 25 years have the Bengals registered fewer than 21 sacks in the season.
Mm.
And that was in 2008, they had 17. They've had 2 sacks in the last 5 games. They ranked dead last in the NFL in sacks per pass play. Elvis Dumervil has 16 sacks by himself.
Right. He had 3.5. He had 3.5.
3.5.
Yesterday.
I mean, he's beating them as a one-man band. Carlos Dunlap is the only player on this team with more than 2 sacks.
Let me take you back to the year 1976, if I may, Paul.
Oh, is it going to be time
it's
for
time
a little skinny old moment?
It is.
Oh, that's exciting. Let's give me a little skinny old moment music here. It's been a while since I've been able to bring in the skinny old moment music. I love my little old-timey piano.
There it is. When a man named Coy Bacon, number 79, playing defensive end for
Coy
the Bengals,
Bacon.
Recorded in one season as a Bengal, 26 quarterback sacks by himself.
Wow.
By himself.
By himself. Coy Bacon.
Pre-sack. They went back, though, and I think he actually has gotten credit for those.
Has he gotten credit
for those? Maybe 22 and a half of those, but at the time I remember it was 26 was the number.
Coy Bacon, what a beast.
I will pull out my Bengals media guide for you here in just 1 second to look that up for
Feel
you.
Feel free.
I will.
Feel free to do that.
I will right now.
Go.
As I move about the room.
Yeah. You can move quickly. He's old, but he's agile, folks.
Oh, no question.
He can move and pick up the media guide and look up the Coy Bacon stats.
As I put my reading glasses
on. The funny thing is, we've talked quite a bit about Coy Bacon in the past few years because we've been looking up all the team stats on the Bengals, setting the franchise record for sacks as they did back in 2012.
I remember him getting credit for 26. Officially in the Bengals media guide, they give him 22 that season.
22. It's a big number. That was back in the day.
It's 7 more, Paul, than what the Bengals currently have as a team.
It is. And now they're still ranking. They still rank in the top 10 in yards per pass, and I think there's a lot of thought of keeping quarterbacks contained and funneling the pass to dictate where it goes. This team, their defense was built on pressure, and you can't let Ben Roethlisberger just sit back there and just carve you up, or you're killing your secondary.
In 3 of the games, really almost in 4 of the games, I'll give 3 of the 4 losses, the common theme has been no pressure on Tom Brady, no pressure on Andrew Luck, no pressure on Ben Roethlisberger, and he tortures him for big yardage until it's time to say, all right, now we're going to pound you to death, and then all 3 of them pounded him. Even in the Cleveland game, while Brian Hoyer didn't kill you,
He had time,
and once they built the lead, what did they do with the running game? They pounded you. Mm-hmm. And so that's the only part I don't know. How do you fix it? Do you just suddenly start to say, you know what, we're going to have to play man coverage out the wazoo and send 7 a bunch of times? They show a lot of
blitz
stuff.
They've brought some.
But maybe you have to do more of it.
Yeah.
I mean, how many times do we see guys jump in the A gap and both of them spin out into coverage? It seems like they never come up that way. They show it a lot, and then they spin out of it. You know, maybe it's a case where do some self-scouting to say, you know, we're coming with a lot of the same blitz looks, and they got our number. They don't trust that we're going to blitz up the A-gap. They think that they see this guy over here, and they know that when we bunch them, they're coming. Maybe there's some self-scouting that has to be done. Maybe you have to show different looks with it. I don't know. Something different has to be done to get pressure on the passer, because they're not doing that at all.
Yeah, they really do. What I want to do is I want to bring in Paul Gunther, who we spoke to on Monday, defensive coordinator, coming off of the loss that was just kind of fluky and befuddling, talking a little bit about pressure and also talking some just about generally looking back on what happened and trying to figure out what the heck happened in that fourth quarter against Pittsburgh and what that really means for this team going forward. So here's some of defensive coordinator Paul Gunther.
Just kind of wheels came off after the, we got the turnover and, you know, they went down and scored that, you know, they converted third down, scored on the next play. And, you know, then we give up the big long pass and before you know it's a two-score game. So, but, you know, I thought, looking at the tape, you know, there were some things we need to clean up on certain plays, but, you know, I still felt good about our plan at that point in the game. I really did. But like I said, I mean, you know, they moved the ball on a lot of teams this year, and like I said, going into the fourth quarter, I think it was 21-20 at that point. You know, I still felt good. I mean, the two touchdowns we gave up were, you know, got, you know, the, we had everything covered, and there was, you know, on the goal line, we let the one guy go, but on the third down play, you know, the back leaked out, and the linebackers helps inside on the leverage, and he kind of jumps inside and gets outside of him. So, you know, it wasn't anything schematically or that we were doing right or wrong. I just thought that at that point in the game, we were kind of doing pretty good.
Counterplay you're talking about. I mean, they didn't really even change formations on it very much. Did they just line up?
Well, no, they motioned some guys across, and you know, we made some
Heath back and forth.
Yeah, we made some adjustments at halftime, and they ran it back the other way. So it's you can't all play out for one play because then you'll be short on the other side of the formation.
Right.
But a lot of those bigger runs came right there in the fourth. They had the one right in the third quarter. That was a long one, but. You know, it was the same play they've been running in the first half. So,
right.
Actually, that was the new play they came back with, the first play of the second half.
Out of a different look?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but like I said, I think I went back in numbers. We gave up 228 yards of offense in 12 minutes in the fourth quarter. So, obviously, you can't do that and expect to win.
It was like 12.5 play.
Yeah. You give up a 94-yard pass, the numbers are going to shoot up there, I mean, obviously, but... You know, we got to do a better job of finishing. We got to do a better job of playing through circumstance, whatever happens, whether they get the ball at the start of the drive at the 5-yard line. I commended our guys last week in Tampa for doing just that after, you know, the first play interception, the play after the onside kick. We went out and played great defense regardless of where the ball was positioned. So it was no different. We did just the opposite in this game. We kind of buckled a little bit when things were against us, you know, so... We can't do that and expect to be good teams.
Talk about stuff that you hadn't seen much of all year. I mean, you guys have been incredible at not letting the deep pass up. Was that just a kind of a fluky situation where you guys just kind of got caught a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, it's just the whole end of the game was fluky to me because, like I said, I felt really good about where we were at that point in the game. Even after the fumble, I felt really good about what we were doing. And, you know, like I said, they're going to get their plays. I mean, they've gotten their plays on everybody this year. But I felt good about it, and then, you know, just for some reason or another, got away from us. Then we give up a third down conversion, they run it in, and then, you know, we go three and out or something, they punt the ball down there, long pass, and then short punt, they're at the ball at the 50. So it was boom, 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 you know, so, you know, they're playing with the bank's money at that point calling offense.
You know, when you looked in the eyes of the players in that fourth quarter, did you see, like, hard-boiled eggs? Did you see... And what'd you see?
No, I just think, you know, one of the messages I'm going to give the guys, and I've been telling them, we have to play better when the odds are against us a little bit, you know, when things aren't going quite as smoothly as we want them to go, and it's the NFL, you know. You got to go out there and buckle up and play good defense, period. You know, like I said, I don't care if the drive starts at the 5 or the minus 5, whatever it is, we got to go play good defense.
Didn't get much pressure on him. Had a lot of time back there. That surprised. They had a new right tackle. They haven't really good with protection. Did that surprise you? Didn't get more pressure?
Yeah. Well, you know, it wasn't like he was scrambling around a lot back there yesterday for sure. But yeah, we have to do a better job with that, converting on first and second down pass rush. One of the things we need to get better at.
We talk a lot about the legitimacy of sack numbers and things like that. But when you look at only two over the last five games, is that something that is a big? Is there a way to fix that? Is that a,
well? We had I think we had two sacks against Tampa that were called back, and I think we had one yesterday.
Yeah, we did.
So I mean, for some reason or another, it's just bad timing of things. I mean, we're getting into the quarterback, we have an illegal contact down the field, or something happens, yeah. and that's kind of been the deal the last couple of weeks. But you know, certainly we got to do a better job of finding ways to put guys in the best position to rush the pass.
Guys like getting those sack numbers. Is that, do you sense that being a frustration amongst some of those guys that you know that are your big
pass rushers? Yeah, I'm sure it is. It's like turnovers. It's like the same thing. You can say, hey, you need to get more turnovers. You need to emphasize those things. But in my opinion, those things come. You just got to keep working on it and just trying to understand, you know, the plan that's in place for the rushes and all those type of things based upon how they're blocking it, you know.
You know, I mean, it's tough when it just happens that fast. When it's all of a sudden, it goes from everything's under control, everything's fine, everything looks good, to boom, boom, boom. How'd we just lose by 21 what he's sitting there saying.
If you think about it, and Andrew Whitworth said this to me after the game yesterday, you know, it's 21-20, and you're thinking we're going to go on a nice long drive here and get a little cushion and we'll be fine. Instead, the fumble happens, touchdown, and right, then 94-yard touchdown pass, it is. It's boom, 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 and you look up, you go, what just happened here?
Yeah, and now you're in an impossible situation, right, against a Pittsburgh team that can give it to Le'Veon Bell and just run you down. It's game over. So they move forward from that now, and you know, we've talked a little bit about it earlier. It's not something that it's over. My Twitter feed would assume. I came back up from the locker room.
I
went down to the locker room, got the interviews, got all my fodder, come back up to find nothing but exclamation points, curse words, and draft talk.
See, I get most
mentions.
People just asking questions. I feel honored that I don't get a lot of the dregs of Twitter.
Yeah, you should be happy.
I am, because most of them ask honest questions that you give them an honest answer, they're happy with it.
Yeah, I try to give a few honest answers, but then you get the
meltdowns.
The meltdown. I don't know why the meltdowns happen. To me, like I have anything to do with it. But
it's all your fault.
I take full responsibility for every loss. But yeah, it was ugly. When I saw draft talk, that's when it kind of melted me down a little bit.
Honestly, that's just silly.
You know how much time we have to talk about the draft?
Yeah.
Guess what? We will still have podcasts regularly throughout the entire offseason talking about the draft. So please,
and trust me,
stop asking me about it.
And I don't want to be Pollyanna-ish here, but this team with 3 weeks to go is in first place.
That's
the funny part to all this. 3 weeks to go, you're in first place. Now you can argue what's still ahead, and do you have much faith they can win after what they've done in some of these games? I get some of that, but 3 weeks to go, you're in first place.
You're in first place, but the thing is, and we talked about this a number of times, and even earlier in this podcast, when you have not proven that you can beat the best, what does it matter? This team's expectations are different now.
Agreed. I get some of that.
You gotta go out there and be able to beat good teams and show that you have the ability to beat good teams in those big situations come playoff time. And time after time this year, when given that opportunity, they haven't done it.
They have failed.
To believe that this team, even if they won the North and they ended up in a game against insert team here, Pittsburgh, Kansas City, Baltimore. Well, Baltimore, maybe they would like.
But, yeah.
You know, but any of these teams that they would be able to go and win, and certainly that they would not be able to go to Denver or New England and be able to, and maybe we'll find out. Maybe something dramatically will change, and all of a sudden it's boom. There you go. They're figuring it out, and they sweep the last three games, and they beat Denver in prime time, and Dalton's a star. And then they go to Heinz Field, and they sack Roethlisberger 8 times and show their domination, and they're rolling into the playoffs. There's just zero reason to believe that can happen.
No, and part of it is you are paying for 24 years of not winning a playoff game is what you're paying for. You're paying for that more than you're paying for the last 3 years. The last 3 years were just the Lucy and Charlie Brown that we got you there and whoop, took it away from you.
Yeah.
That you're paying for 24 years of that, and I have no response to that because I get it. I get that.
No, I get it too. I absolutely get it. And I don't know that there's as much paying as it is just the reality of what this team is this year.
Well, I'm always one too, though. I really do. I love the forecast. I love to look ahead, and we love to look at trends, and I like the right trend stuff, and so do you. But, you know, really, that's part of the beauty of sports still is you don't know till they actually play games. And right now, all I know is with those three games left to play, this team's in first place. If I was a fan, I would at least hold out some hope that, okay, first place is all I can ask for right now. This whole league's been crazy this year. This team's been on a roller coaster ride. What's to tell me they don't play well the last 3 weeks? Just of how goofy this league's been. That's what I would hold on to. But you're right. I mean, there's a fringe faction out there, boy, that they're waiting for the shoe to drop. And I would suggest if you do what I did.
The fringe faction thinks it just did. They think the shoe just did drop there. And I feel bad for the people that can't just enjoy the games. And I know that it's hard that when you've been burnt enough and you see a team.
Well, see, then you do what I did because I grew up a fan. I grew up going to games as a fan. Once I got into the media, I became obviously less of a fan. But I grew up a huge Bengal. I cried when they lost a 75 playoff game to the Raiders, for goodness sakes. Don't ask me why, but I did. But because of what took place throughout the decade of the 90s, it was easy to just say, I have no fan left in me. So I at that point as a fan, I've turned the page. I would think if I've gotten to that point where I've jumped off after yesterday, then just turn the page entirely on the franchise.
Right.
Don't invest any more energy into it. You'll be fine. That's what I did. You can do that.
Yeah.
But if you're still that much into it and you are still caring that much, I think I'd sit there and look and go, team's in first place. That's all I can ask for with 3 weeks to go.
Right. You'd like them to look better. You'd like to believe that they can beat good teams, but you never. I mean, even if they lost to Cleveland and then they beat Denver on Monday Night Football, there would suddenly be a lot of reason to believe
that this team
could make
funny.
A run. You know,
but the week leading up to the Denver game would be
it's
Armageddon.
Well, you talk about Armageddon. I mean, if this spirals. If this,
then it is Armageddon.
And so that's why I think this Cleveland game, because the way we mentioned getting to 9 as an important number to get in the playoffs, might be bigger than the other two in that respect.
Correct, because then you've at least got a little bit of chance to breathe.
Because you can get that Cleveland game, you start to feel like you're probably in the playoffs, but you've got those two ahead of you. But if you lose the Cleveland game, here's what you're looking down the barrel of.
8-7-1 and a complete collapse.
8-7-1 and having lost your last 4 in a row.
And it would be goodbye to the head coach at that stage. Yes, it would.
No, it wouldn't.
Yes, it would. I would promise you that.
You have been around here for far too long to sit here and say it would be goodbye to the head coach.
It would absolutely be goodbye to the head coach. I'm not in that faction that says if he loses another playoff game, it's goodbye. That's insane. Make the playoffs 4 straight years. You're not going to fire a head coach over that. You're just not going to do that. In this case, though, you don't make it with fan apathy already at all. We've seen the crowds. Hell, the place wasn't even full yesterday.
Were you around in 2010? When Marvin was re-upped after the 4-12 debacle and 10 straight losses
and
this guy has gone to the playoffs now for the last 5 years, and you think that all of a sudden the tune is going to change?
I think there's a better chance that Marvin would walk away. Or he says, yeah, and that's the other part. Or he simply says, I've done everything I can do. I can't do anymore. I'm done. I'm out.
I don't see Mike Brown, that is. Looking at it.
Well, if that's the case, and if I'm a fan that doesn't want to buy tickets, you better hope the NFL finds a way, or the Congress finds a way to lift that blackout rule for good. Because next year you'll have 6 of the 8 games blacked out. I will promise you that. If this team goes 8-7-1, you will not have 50,000 fans for most of those games. I can promise you that.
You're probably right on that. I mean, and that's something that they've got to come to terms with. The question for me.
And that is less fudge cakes for me.
You think he's a big fudge cake guy?
No question.
No.
The Frisch's Queensgate? Absolutely.
Yeah. Have you been there? Have you stalked out Frisch's Queensgate?
I've been to the Frisch's Queensgate. Absolutely. Soup salad bar, it's awesome. Pumpkin likes the soup and salad bar and the watermelon.
Oh, yeah. We could go on with that impression for a while, I think. Yeah, so I just don't think that he would do it. The question is, who is making that decision now?
Great question. That's a great question.
To me, that is when anybody asks me about Marvin and hot seats, the first thing I say is probably not. The second thing I say is, but it really depends mostly on who's now making that call. If Mike Brown is still the one making that call, because he said he's given up most of the operation of the regular day to day, he's kind of let Katie start to
have.
Mad at
Katie's going to look at the
bottom line,
no question. And I understand.
And say, how do you keep the fans on board? And if it were to come to that, if you looked at an 8-7, 8-7-1 spiral, missed the playoffs, how do you keep the fans on board?
Because you're already
that's
gonna,
the only way.
Because Paul, you're already going to lose some fans again if you go to the playoffs and lose. Again, I think that's insane to think that way. But,
sure they are.
But so we're talking about if you don't even make it. Oh, it's a mass exodus.
Who would take the fall if Marvin stayed? Some change would have to happen. Okay.
Unfortunately, I think the defensive coordinator, I mean, it's his first
after
year.
After 1 year, I don't see him do it after 1 year.
And look, I think he's done a good job in many ways. I really do. He's dealing with a defensive line that's in decline.
No Vontaze Burfict.
No,
his linebacker situation has been terrible.
I'm not telling you that's what I would do. But if you ask me who the fall guy would be, you'd have to see how these last three games. If the last three games play out like the fourth quarter of the Pittsburgh game played out, then unfortunately, yes. And that would be unfortunate because I think Paul is really
under
got a
this
chance
administration,
to do some
particularly under when you know as loyal as everyone is here, no coordinator has been let go after 1 year before.
But I don't see any finger being pointed at a position coach. And if you make a position coach a sacrificial lamb, nobody cares. You change the Hayeses out, nobody's going to care. You change Vance Joseph out, oh, he's done a good job, nobody's going to care. You either change the head coach or the coordinators. Or personnel. And the only major personnel that you would want, that the fans want changed, is 14 gone. And do you really want to then start with another quarterback?
No,
I don't.
That wouldn't be the case.
Agreed. So I'll flip the question on you. Who would take the fall?
I think it would be put on personnel. I think it would be put on injuries, and I think that they would tout the draft, maybe a slightly splashy free agent signing.
Sadly, the last couple drafts have not yielded you a whole lot.
This one has contributed. I mean, this one has contributed. You've got a lot of guys that have contributed this year.
The two running backs have contributed. Marcus Hunt hasn't contributed.
Russell Bodine has started every game, whether he's been great or not, yeah. You know, is for others to decide. But I mean, he's certainly contributed. James Wright has become the third wide receiver. He's made some plays.
I need to see that. He can't be a third. He's not a third wide receiver for 16 games in this league.
He's made some plays.
He's made some plays in a couple games.
He's only played in a couple games.
Danny Farmer made some plays once.
That's true. That's true. I mean, I think there's been enough guys that have contributed a bit that this draft class has been okay. Certainly not that you can judge on at this point, certainly not until Darquez Denard gets a chance to play.
They're whiffing on linemen all of a sudden, defensive linemen.
Yeah, the Marcus Hunt factor.
The Will Clark factor.
Well, Will Clark has only played like probably about 30 or 40 snaps.
I understand that. There's a reason why he's only played 30 or 40 snaps.
I just don't think that you can judge him on that much. The Marcus Hunt factor, him being hurt this year, he was getting phased out before he was hurt.
Yeah, and
he was only playing like 7 to 10 snaps a game.
And I will tell you, I think some of that, for whatever reason, is it's like coaches are real comfortable with veterans. Right, wrong, or indifferent. Robert Gathers has been dreadful. I mean, he's just been dreadful, and he gets chance after chance after chance, and it's because I think he's a veteran, and that's hurt Marcus Hunt a little bit, I think.
Yeah, you're right. I thought for sure we would see more of a phasing
in
of Marcus. I absolutely
did.
And a phasing out of Gathers, at least a little bit.
Yep, I agree with you.
And we haven't seen any of it. We saw the opposite of it.
And in defensive coaches, we only can watch a handful of minutes of practice, and you know, they see practice. They're, it's not like coaches are not going to play guys they think can help them. And again, they're more comfortable with veterans. But they're not. If a guy in practice shows you he can play, they're going to play him.
When is the last time you said, "Man, Robert Gathers really had an effect on this game"?
Positive.
Yeah, that's an issue.
The time he spun into coverage, didn't he have an interception this year when he spun into coverage against Atlanta or somebody early in the year?
Yeah, he had a sack at one point. But I mean, it's
yeah, he had a sack at one point.
But it's not like. It's not like you say, Man, he's been everywhere.
He's made a lot of plays this game. No, he doesn't. You're right. I agree with you.
You can't afford any guys on your defense that you don't occasionally say that about.
But the one thing I would tell you...
But who else do you have?
Well, the one thing I'll tell you is, and this could be a reason why, too, and it's something we probably ought to address with Paul at some point. I mean, they use Gethers in different circumstances. They'll line him in the middle.
He's that spinner.
And maybe Margus, unfortunately, can't do any of that. He's just not, for whatever reason, he either can't
pick it up. Gathers can't do any of
that. I'm not here to tell you but if they've decided that he's that guy they want to put in that spinner spot, and he at least grasps it mentally and goes to the right place, and Margus just isn't capable of doing that, all right, I'll give you some of that, but to me right now, the spinner's spinning out of control because he just doesn't get it done.
I would love to see how a physical freak like Margus Hunt deals with being moved all around and start running and getting him in space a little bit more.
How about him with a running head start?
Right. You know what I'm saying? I mean, the guy is a freak. He's scary. All right. So
I picked up the guard and the center, and I just took him wherever I wanted.
Right. I mean, it's possible. I wanna spin off of all this. We just went into a really dark place.
Yes, we did.
We just catered to our fans that are standing on the ledge.
Yep. Sorry to make you jump there, Fred from Delhi. My bad. Sorry to your family.
Why you gotta go to the west side?
All right.
Why you gotta assume it was in Delhi? It could have been Fred from
Jim from Springboro. I'm sorry. And Lucy from Forest Hills. I'm so sorry for you.
Why no one in Kentucky?
Oh, we don't jump. We only jump with the big Lulus.
That's true. Far, far different priorities.
Yep.
One thing I do want to say, hey, cheer up. Cheer up, Fred from Delhi. A.J. Green is amazing.
He is amazing.
A.J. Green, in case you haven't been paying attention, has been on a four-game run ever since what we heard about as the challenge that Hugh Jackson laid down to him, and really was partially him getting healthy, partially Hugh Jackson putting his foot right where the sun don't shine in A.J. Green. He's been on an insane run. He's averaging 132 yards a game, almost the best four-game run of his career. The end of the run where he had five straight 100-yard games last year, he barely was better on as far as average. He's got three touchdowns in 4 weeks. 8 receptions. He had 224 yards.
Almost made an amazing 50-yard catch towards the end, which would have gotten a first down deep, down 28-21.
Nearly had that
almost
one.
Almost made a heck of a play on
which
that
ball. Which I actually hated that play call.
I hated it, too. I didn't think.
I thought it was
to get a first down.
I thought it was, I dubbed it today, the most underrated, important play of that fourth quarter.
You were right.
3rd and 9. And if you go back and watch and you look at it, I posted a vine on the blog.
Antoine Blake was covering.
Look. Yeah, Antoine Blake on him. He runs. It clearly was a sort of a hitch and go, kind of a try to shake him, because you see one on one with Antoine Blake, you like your chances.
Right.
There was so much cushion. I mean, it was beyond
belief. They were giving you a first
down. How much cushion? They gave you a first down. If he would have just cut off the route, and granted, that may have not what it was called for or whatever, but if he would have just cut off the route and turned around, it would have been a 15 yard gain that the guy would not have even have been near
him. And you'd have been in Steelers territory down 28-21.
You needed a first down.
Yes, you did. I don't disagree.
Especially considering everything falling apart around you, you needed a sustained drive to get down there and get points. You needed a first down. This was at 28-21.
Correct.
Right before
that is correct. Yep.
And you just launch one up as a heave, jump
ball. And again, he almost made a great play. If not for Mike Mitchell, the safety coming over, he might have caught it.
And that's fine, but Mike Mitchell, the safety, was coming over. And you just threw a jump ball up 50-50 at best, probably far less than that percentage, even to A.J. Green, on 3rd and 9 when there's so many different plays that you can run to try to get a first down there. I thought it was the worst call of the game.
I agree.
And it cost them in a huge way, especially after Leon
Hall. Yeah, because then it was punt, 94-yard touchdown, game over.
Game over. They really needed that score. They needed some kind of a score there. But that doesn't take away from what A.J. Green has done.
And part of it, there's no question, Hugh Jackson, I think part of that conversation was more to challenge him to say, look, if your toe still might be hurting, but you have to push yourself through that. If not, maybe we'll shut you down. I don't know if it got to that point. But he even talked about yesterday, this is the best he's felt since training camp.
Yeah.
You can see it. I mean, you can see he's explosive, he obviously, some of it was Ike Taylor related, because Ike Taylor hurt his knee earlier in the game, and
but he was
coming back from an injury, and Ike's owned him in the past, and he turned the tables on him, but there's no doubt this last four games, he has been phenomenal.
Yeah, he's been phenomenal, and now
let the Houston Texans know all about it in that game.
Let everybody know, he's let everybody kind of know about it, and I think that's been part of it, is he's been playing with a chip on his shoulder, but Now Joe Haden comes along with Cleveland.
Who has done a good job
who
on
has bit. You talk about owned him.
The last, that game.
For the most part, more than any corner that I've seen, we've seen every good corner pretty much in this league go up against A.J. Green. And Revis did a really nice job.
But he also had a couple balls on Revis, too, though.
But as far as consistently, man, Joe Haden has been as good on A.J. Green as anybody in the league.
And part of, I think, the conversation, because you remember that Thursday night game, there were a couple of routes where, frankly, A.J. Green just quit. He just decided.
And that's where the Hugh Jackson talking to came from.
Absolutely right. But I think it was a source of frustration the way the game was going. His toe was probably bugging him. It was cold. Joe Hayden's not, he's just kicking his ass all over the place. Mm-hmm. And it was disappointing to watch him honestly look like he just quit at a couple of points.
Yeah.
And so I think for him this week, that matchup for him is it's more personal than he made the Ike Taylor matchup yesterday.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. And they got to have it. And they have been getting it. I mean, when they've needed somebody to be that hammer, he has been it. And yesterday, the game against Pittsburgh was the best we've seen him. I mean, you know, the numbers speak for themselves, yep. 224 yards. I think he can carry this team in a lot of ways. I mean, the way if he can continue to do what he's been doing, it's opened up absolutely everything for them. And I mean, and yet again, I don't want to delve into this topic like we do over and over again, but the numbers speak for themselves in the running game, which was opened up for one running back and not for the other one. 6 rushes for 17 yards for Giovanni Bernard and 8 for 46 for Jeremy Hill. I mean, we're at the point where it's ridiculous. Well, this is still a 50-50
split. It was on my list of questions to ask Marvin today, but when he was in his mood, I thought I'll save it for maybe Wednesday and see if things change or talk to you, Jackson. But I wonder as a coaching staff if they don't have to come to the point of deciding one guy is going to get the majority of snaps and the other guy is a specialist role. And that would be Jeremy Hill getting the majority of snaps and Gio being an especially role.
No.
It's not working. It's only a couple of games, but it's not working. There's no flow. There's no rhythm for either one of them. This team was at its best when Jeremy Hill was running downhill for 3 games.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I there's no doubt about it, but it's not happening. It hasn't. Wouldn't it have happened to this point? This is just the latest.
Or was yesterday the breaking point? I mean,
you don't know. Maybe
this team has reinvented itself a couple times this year in that way. So maybe this
and
is
Hugh
the
typically is not afraid to do whatever needs to
be
done.
He loves Giovanni Bernard. He's made that clear to all of us. He respects him as a player.
How many times can you watch a guy get two? He had a long of 4 yesterday.
Yeah. And I think, honestly, with that line, your strength is running more power than some of the zone blocking stuff. And the power is going to come with running with Jeremy Hill running power.
Downhill. And the closest they ever come to breaking long ones is with Jeremy Hill.
Yeah, he should have. And he knew he had
the one almost
yesterday.
He had a
15-yard run where he got tripped up really by the ankles. And if he steps through that tackle, which he was really, you could tell he was mad at himself for not doing it. He had a blocker in front and maybe green grass.
He was just trying to get around Gresham and got caught from behind.
Yep.
He saw all clear in front of him. I mean,
damn Gresham.
Boy, Gresham. He just...
I don't want to deviate into that, but that was just funny you brought that up because it was.
He does. He gives you the. It's every time he gives you the touchdown. He does his whatever that was.
The Michael Jackson dance.
Good for you, Jermaine. Do your dance, and then it's a penalty, and then it's a.
It's getting in the way of Jeremy Hill.
Long run. In fairness, he picked up the guy that was going to tackle him. It was a nice play.
It was. You're
but
right.
It's just Jermaine Gresham giveth, Jermaine Gresham taketh away every time. It's just, it's unbelievable.
I like the play where he caught the ball, turned around, and just fell down. Decided I'm not going to break a tackle. Why? It's only 3rd and 8, and I caught it 4 yards. I'm good.
Yeah.
Don't hurt me.
So, before we went down the standard, our weekly Jermaine Gresham tangent, I just, the way A.J. Green is playing, if you combine it with that wear-you-down running game of Jeremy Hill, I think, you know, you see.
Joe Bernard, to me, if I'm the offensive coordinator, he becomes my 3rd down back. And that's it. That's it.
And, I wrote last week about a story that no one wanted to talk about.
Yeah, and he went up with, what, 5 catches?
He had 3. No, he only had 3.
It felt like 5.
He only had 3.
And a couple of them were garbage time. There was a couple of garbage time ones.
He had the one where he fell over.
That's right.
And almost got picked.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you saw this what you're talking about with he got out in space, was able to make a couple of moves. The fact that the numbers behind Giovanni Bernard not getting passes is just staggering.
It is.
As I asked around last week, very few people were really interested in delving into that topic. And, And I don't know, when you look at what Le'Veon Bell's doing, how do you not say, isn't this what this guy was supposed to be in a lot of ways?
Did you watch the routes, Le'Veon Bell? I know you did. This is a rhetorical
question. He's incredible.
He's not incredible. What he's incredible at is going and checking down 3 yards, and they jump. Everybody has to go back deep in coverage, and they go here in space.
Yeah.
And then he's incredible.
Yeah.
The route running.
Did you see the move that he put on Emmanuel Amir for the touchdown?
Oh, no
though?
Question. No, no.
I mean, absolute shake.
I'm saying, in space, he is Gio Bernardi in that circumstance could be that guy, too.
Yeah.
As an absolute, check down guy. You've got A.J. running something deep, and you got Sanu running something deep, and everybody's dropped deep in coverage, and Pittsburgh is so good at him. He is so – the one thing he does do is he times it beautifully. He stays in the block. It's almost like 1,001, 1,002. All right, now I can go out and turns around 3 yards across the line of scrimmage where everybody's
and
dropped deep, and here's the turn, catch, and now try to tackle me.
Yeah, and they need – and the Bengals just have
71 catches. Yeah. The man has.
Yeah, 71.
He's got an outside chance for a 1,600-yard rushing season and 1,000-yard receiving season.
Yeah.
That's insane.
He gets a lot of touches.
Yes. Now he's going to get his ass kicked here at some point. He's got 96 touches
to be
in the
a
last
running
three
back
games.
In the NFL. The Steelers have made it abundantly clear they are going to ride this guy until his legs give out, and then they'll go draft another one and never have to give him his second contract.
I'm doing this off the top of my head because it was something I was thinking about from a story perspective from a running back. Look at some of the top teams in the league. Outside the nuttiness of New England, where week to week you don't know who the number one back is. The funny part for them is usually when they put a guy as the number one back for that week, he gets what?
Most of the carries
for that week. Le'Veon Bell, most of the carries. In Denver, even, it's C.J. Anderson right now getting most of the carries. Hillman's gotten some in there as well. Seattle, Marshawn Lynch gets most of the carries. In Dallas, DeMarco Murray gets most of the carries. In Green Bay, Eddie Lacy gets most of the carries. Most teams, they're going to ride a guy so he can be in a flow of a game. I just don't know. You need to have two backs. I'm not discounting the fact that you don't need to have two backs in this league. But I just don't know if you can rotate them series to series like the Bengals are doing and have success. I need to see a team do that before I can believe it.
Yeah. Don't you find yourself after every game walking away saying, man,
if
Jeremy Hill needed more of an effect on that game.
No question.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And that's a problem that they've got to figure out. But
I don't walk away going, boy, they needed to get Gio more touches.
Yeah. You saw what happened when he touched the ball. It didn't go all that well.
Right.
All right. Well, we can pretty much about get out of here now. What do you think? You about done?
I'm good.
I just
follow your lead, man.
Yeah, I don't even know where I'm going half the time.
No, I know you don't.
We were all over the place in this one.
Yes, we were. But
you know,
it was fun.
You challenged me to go off my notes.
I know.
Because you don't like that I try to keep notes and try to keep track of everything fairly closely. You said it grates you.
Fun shows are when you just bounce around, man, and just go on riffs.
Just, I know, and you're a great improv guy. We learned last week. I'm maybe not so great at improv. We learned that on Beyond the Stretch.
I know it's on your mind apparently a lot of times.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, that was not my intention to go down that route.
The one word that you blurted out in improv.
Yeah, yeah.
Sex.
I didn't mean to.
It's got a Bengal in trouble. It's got us in trouble.
No one's in trouble. No one's in trouble. I just did improv. Just things just happen. But it was not
fun things you do at a tailgate party. Pat you on the shoulder and you have to say one word.
No.
Sex. Sure. Every tailgate I've gone to, it's just rampant sex, Paul.
Listen, you go get on an improv stage and tell me what happens.
Oh, it's
okay?
Hard. I'm not telling you it's not hard.
It is not easy. It is not easy.
Those folks were great. They were fabulous.
They were awesome. I love OTR Improv.
Yep.
And by the way, if you want, I will plug the heck out of their show because they are doing starting next week.
I believe it is.
Next week, every Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday at Arnold's, they're doing a sketch comedy show down there called The Naughty List. It's all you good people, the OTR Improv, which they're the house improv band at the house improv players at the No Theater in OTR, and they're hilarious.
Yeah, they were great.
And they want to come back whenever we will have them back.
I'd love to have them back.
I would love to have them back.
Let it simmer for a little
bit. We might need a minute. We got a little crazy in that last one, so we may. But I definitely have plans on having the improv folks back again because they were awesome. We have Mo Sanu on this week. It's going to be fun. I think we're going to have some soccer-related shenanigans.
So he'll use his feet and not his hands.
That'll be important, yeah. Maybe we'll learn something. Maybe he'll start catching the ball with his feet.
13 drops.
It does.
I'm just saying.
It does lead the league. It
does lead the league.
Can we just go one night and not bring that up, Skinny?
He's had a very good season.
He has had a very good season.
Except of late when he hasn't caught many passes.
The drops are the blemish.
And he doesn't get targeted much anymore. But other than that.
That's because they just keep throwing it to 18 because he's running wide open.
That is correct.
But you're right. I mean, Sanu has been so great. He's been a breakout star. But the drops have been killing him.
And the funny part is, we're going to ask about this because I heard him on another show last week. He actually bought a jugs gun in the offseason and spent a bunch of time working on his hands, of all things, when he really hasn't had a ton of drop issues in his career. It sounds odd that he had
a few in big spots.
In big spots, correct.
But he didn't have a ton of drops. In college, he did.
But here's the sad part. The guy's gone to all the trouble, obviously, and I like Mo a lot. I know you do,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, he's a very good guy.
Earnest guy, nice guy, all that stuff. That he went to all that trouble in the offseason to really work hard on that, and all of a sudden, it's not paying off. That's strange to me. Doesn't seem fair.
That can be a mental thing, I think.
I asked him that. He gave me the typical answer. No, I'm with you. I think it starts to snowball a little bit. That the
in
next pass throw my way, oh gosh, I got to catch this thing.
Yeah.
Bing! There it goes again.
Yeah, yeah.
13 is a lot in 13 games, my friend.
13 is a lot in 13 games, and they've been some big ones. Another big one this past week as well with the drop. That was on the hit that Andy got blown up on as well.
Yes, it was.
But, yeah, so we'll have most new this week. I think we're going to have some fun with the with his soccer, love of soccer and soccer skills. Should be fun, so come on down. Make sure you check it out every Tuesday at Warline Logger House. We've got that going on. We are headed to Cleveland this week. Let's hope it doesn't. Is it going to snow? Are we going to get any lake effect action?
That's a good question.
I don't know. I hope not. Because we have the Great Lakes Brewery Tour on Saturday.
I'm looking very forward to that.
Great Lakes make such a great product.
I'm more excited for that than I am for anything I've done in quite a long time, yeah. Paul.
That's kind of sad.
It is a little bit.
Yeah. I'd like to think that there's maybe something better than a brewery tour going on in our life.
Not in the last month, probably. No. It's been a rough month for me.
It's been a rough month. So, yeah, we're going to go on the brewery tour. We'll give you a full report from the Great
Lakes. If we can remember it.
Yes, whatever we have left to remember of it.
And we will be walking or cabbing, just in case anybody's
Yeah.
Not all the way up to Cleveland, but once we get to Cleveland.
Yeah, the tour is not far from where our hotel is.
That's
so
a great thing.
That is a very, very important thing. We will be very safe.
Good evening. A local sports writer today wandered into Lake Erie.
Oh, yes. Skinner, 84, You never want to have your age listed directly after your name in a newspaper story.
It's not
only
good.
Something bad
That's
has happened.
That's correct. You've either been arrested or you're dead.
Yeah.
Or fired.
So luckily we're none of those yet. So we have that this weekend. Very excited about it. And the tone of the fan base will be very dramatically different depending on what happens this weekend. It could go one of two ways.
Whoa.
I mean, imagine. What it could go if it's another L in Cleveland, where they have historically struggled in recent history there. They only have lost four of their last five, not too far into the planning
for
the weekend.
But they also had kind of owned them here, though.
Yeah, so maybe it finally flips for them.
It's the flip.
But it's one that they so badly need to have. So we'll have all your report from there. Check out society.com.
Thank you to
josephauto.com. Our fine friends, josephauto.com. They're great people over there. We love them. They sponsor all of our stuff we have here on the site and the podcast and everything else. So love Joseph Auto. And, so we'll have all that, and we'll bring it to you next week. So I guess we can get out of here. We just need music.
What kind of song?
We need something.
Oh, I got it.
You've got it?
Yeah, it's Old Guy.
It's Old Guy. It's okay.
Because of what were some of the words that you used when you looked up on the thesaurus for what happened?
Oh, yeah. The collapse, the ruination, the wreck.
The wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald.
The wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. That's what it was. It was the wreck of the Edmund. It's such a catchy little tune.
Yes, it
we'll
is.
We'll get people humming on their way out of the podcast. So thank you.
And it went down in one of the Great Lakes, right? Did it go down in Erie?
Sure. It might have.
It did. It went down in one of the Great Lakes. I just can't remember which one.
Yeah, well you'll have to listen to the song and let it play out.
The big lake they call Gitchagumi. I don't know which one that is.
I don't know. There is no Gitchagumi.
Yeah, that's what the locals call it.
All right.
It's one of the lines.
Yeah, we'll thank the Edmund Fitzgerald for showing up here, and we look forward to hearing from you again next week when we bring Scribe Session 2. So we'll see you there.
The legend lives on from the Chippewa on down of the big lake they call Gitchagumi. The lake, it is said, never gives up her dead when the skies of November turn gloomy. With a load of iron ore, 26,000 tons more than the Edmund Fitzgerald weighed empty. That good ship and true was a bone to be chewed when the gales of November came early. The ship was the pride of the American side, coming back from some mill in Wisconsin. As the big freighters go, it was bigger than most, with a crew and good captain well seasoned. Concluding some terms with a couple of steel firms when they left fully loaded for Cleveland. Then later that night when the ship's bell rang, could it be the north wind they'd been feeling? The wires made a tattletale sound when the wave broke over the railing. And every man knew, as the captain did too, 'twas the witch of November come stealing. The dawn came late and the breakfast had to wait when the gales of November came slashing. When afternoon came, it was freezing rain in the face of a hurricane west wind. When supper time came, the old cook came on deck saying, "Fellas, it's too rough to feed you." 7 p.m. a main hatchway caved in. He said, "Fellas, it's been good to know ya." The captain wired in, he had water coming in, and the good ship and crew was in peril. And later that night, when his lights went out of sight, came the wreck of